It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
I'm going to start today with a film review, The Dragon Prophecy. It's directed by Dinesh D'Souza, based on a book by Jonathan Cahn. It had a very limited release in theaters, shown just 2 days last week, with very few runs in San Diego, all of them in the evening. Primarily, it's available through streaming or DVD. Dana and I still wanted to see it in the theater. Theaters have not recovered much since COVID. We count ourselves amongst the ones who would like to keep movie theaters alive. I was looking forward to seeing this film for several reasons. I admire the director, Dinesh D'Souza. As for Cahn, well, I appreciate that he's a fellow Jewish Christian, and of course I share his interest in pointing people toward the Bible. I have in the past found some of his so-called discovery of hidden biblical symbolism far-fetched, and his predictions do not always come true. The purpose of this movie was to key in on several themes. They promised, or I should say they warned, that there would be explicit footage of the Hamas attack against Israeli families on October 7th, 2023. They also wanted to explore the mystery of anti-Semitism, using the Bible to show that it's a spiritual battle. And finally, they wanted to correct the historical revision of who really has claim to the ancient land in the Middle East, something I do in my own nonfiction book, The Holocaust Against Israel. So let me cut to the bone. The movie was very good, very important. I do recommend this film, especially as something to be shared with friends and family who know absolutely nothing about the Middle East other than university talking points that come straight from the lips of Hamas and the pit of hell. This movie may just enlighten and educate them. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not critical of the film at all. I am. But please know ahead of time, before I share my critique, its flaws are minor. All in all, the film gets a thumbs up. First thumbs up goes to the title. That was well chosen. The title of the movie is very fitting. In this particular case, I agree with the symbolism because the dragon in Revelation 12, referenced in the movie title, was one of the few images in that mysterious book of Revelation that the Apostle John actually identified. He said the dragon was Satan and that the dragon persecutes the woman who bore the male child. The male child is identified in the book of Revelation as Jesus. It says, she gave birth to a son, a male child who will rule all the nations with an iron scepter, and their child was snatched up to God and to his throne. So if the male child is Jesus, the woman bearing the child obviously is Israel. I know some might be thinking, well, maybe they just mean his mother Mary. But the passage is clear that the dragon goes after the rest of her offspring. This means the Jews. Satan hates the Jews because through them, the Messiah came who forgives sin and causes Satan to lose souls. So that explanation of scripture was very appropriate. Unfortunately, there was also the expected obligatory talk about us being close to the final generation that will see Christ's coming, his second coming, I should say. As I've reminded you often, Jesus said no one knows the day or the hour. He was very clear on that point. Now, we may indeed be the generation that witnesses his second coming. With all that's going on in the world, especially the increase of anti-Semitism, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. But I'm not going to say that I know this for a fact, because I don't know this for a fact, either does anybody else. Still, regardless of when, regardless of the exact calendar, there will, according to Scripture, definitely be a second coming of Jesus someday. And at that time, he will return to deliver Israel from her enemies. The temple will be rebuilt sometime before this happens. So this is legitimate to talk about, and the movie did talk a lot about the temple. They went too far, but they didn't overemphasize that stuff as much as they might have. Mostly, all prophecy put aside, it was an excellent Bible history lesson. They did a good job of demonstrating that the Jews have an ancient claim to the land. They showed interesting archaeology corroborating this, including the name of King David on basalt, and also an inscription with Pontius Pilate's name in Caesarea. Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor who ordered Jesus executed. This fascinating find is something I myself saw during my visits to Israel. Unfortunately, Dinesh made a mistake in this section of the movie, claiming that the inscription in Caesarea is the only mention of Pontius Pilate outside the Bible. Look, I like Dinesh. He's usually very factual. I must correct this one, however. Several ancient historians outside of the Bible mention Pilate. Josephus talks about him a great deal. The historian Philo also talks about Pilate. Now, some might say these were both Jewish historians. That's true, but Dinesh didn't say there were no writings outside of Judaism. He said there were no writings outside of the Bible. The words of Josephus and Philo are ancient sources outside of the Bible. Even so, we also have a Roman historian named Tacitus who mentions Pilate. He tells us that Jesus was executed by Pilate, ancient historian. He also tells us this happened in Judea, which is interesting in its own right, because it shows that the ancient land was called Judea, taken from the tribe of Judah, where we get the nickname Jew from. This clearly disproves the lying, historically revised narrative that there was once an indigenous group of people called the Palestinians, who were the rightful inhabitants of the Holy Land, who lived there thousands of years until the 20th century, when all those mean and nasty Jews from Europe came and occupied their land. One thing the movie does explain in this film that's extremely important, the word Palestine is taken from the word Philistine, a Latinized version of it. The Philistines were an ancient enemy of the Jews, who coincidentally were located on the coast in the area that we today call Gaza. In fact, Gaza was an ancient Philistine city. Now, this ancient enemy had long since been extinct, over 2,000 years before the 20th century rebirth of Israel. Khan, in his usual fashion, tries to show a new Philistine nation, quote-unquote, the Palestinians recreating biblical times to fulfill biblical prophecy. Interesting idea, but there really isn't any clear prophecy about that. Although there is clear, fascinating prophecy about Jews returning to their homeland and becoming a nation again. Isaiah chapter 11 is one of several places where you can find that prediction. But there was detail about this name Palestinian that I wish the film had gone into, and they didn't, because it's key to understanding today's propaganda. They scratched the surface. They really didn't connect the dots for people. Let me connect them right now. In the early 2nd century, there was a Jewish revolt crushed by the Roman Emperor Hadrian. At that time, he renamed the land Palestinia, the Latin word again for Philistine, an old enemy of the Jews, a people who again had been extinct, and at this time they had been extinct several centuries at the time Hadrian dug up the name. And at this time, under Hadrian, many Jews were murdered, carried off into slavery, or scattered around the world. He changed the name to rub their noses in the name of their enemies. It was an insult to their land. But a remnant of Jews did remain in that land for 2,000 years, all the way up to the 20th century. Palestine remained a nickname, nickname only, for the Holy Land. There was no significant Arab population in that region until after the time of Muhammad in the 600s and the conquering spread of Islam taking possession of the Holy Land. At the turn of the 20th century, the League of Nations, in the Balfour Declaration, invited Jews to resettle their ancient home. In paradoxical fashion, the British, after inviting the Jews to return, sold over 75% of Palestine to the Arabs, creating a new country called Transjordan. This is an extremely important and seldom taught fact. Please catch this. 75% of what had been offered to the Jews was sold behind their backs to the Arabs instead. Not only were the Arabs offered a separate Palestinian quote-unquote state long ago, but they have been living in one since the early part of the 20th century. It's called Jordan, a country three times the size of what remained for the Jews. The Jews accepted this betrayal only because they had no choice. After all, a sliver of the promise was better than no land at all. But the Arabs didn't want the Jews to have even a sliver, and fresh controversy broke out over what to do with the remaining 25%. To appease the Arabs, the United Nations voted to divvy up the remaining 25% between the Jews and the Arabs. United Nations resolution, and they were taking over now from the League of Nations, that resolution 181 called for the partition of a Jewish and Arab state. The Jews accepted this partition, the Arabs did not. After the partition vote from the United Nations in 1947, Israel declared its independence on May 14, 1948. One day later, five Arab armies invaded Israel from Egypt, Transjordan, Syria, Lebanon, and Iraq. This war had nothing to do with allowing a two-state solution. Indeed, the Arabs waged war because they were rejecting a two-state solution. Their stated goal was the complete extermination of Israel. Arabs living in the Holy Land were encouraged by the surrounding Arab countries to abandon their homes or join the invading army. "We're coming through, but the war won't last long. The Jews will be gone and you can return to your homes." Well, it didn't turn out that way. Instead, Israel won the war. Those who were displaced became refugees, but not all Arabs in the Holy Land left. Many Arabs remained and became Israeli citizens. And as citizens of Israel, they have more rights than any Arab in any Muslim Arab country. A publicity ploy by Yasser Arafat in the 1960s began attaching the name Palestinian to a people who previously called themselves Arabs, and that's when the narrative about the so-called original Palestinian inhabitants began. As for the movie showing the horrors of October 7th, mostly they showed dead bodies and pictures of the deceased at memorials. I had a mixed reaction to this. You see, the people who caught this on video and released the video were Hamas. They did atrocious things that day. In some cases, they streamed the rape of Jewish women over their Facebook pages. On that same day, they also beheaded people, including babies. They stuck babies into ovens, just like the Nazis did in German concentration camps. Some of that stuff was recorded. The footage was available, but not shown in the film, as I expected. On one hand, I was glad this wasn't shown, because I didn't want to see it. On the other hand, this needs to be seen. Can you just imagine if these videos were placed over a big video billboard at Times Square in the middle of a Palestinian rights protest? One thing they did report in the film, and this was harrowing, young men calling their parents, bragging about the people they murdered, and parents telling them how proud they were. Which goes back to the truth that belief in peace for this region of the world is naive. Don't misunderstand me. I do applaud Trump and his deal that's bringing in surrounding Arab nations. I agree that Trump deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. He's a phenomenal negotiator and the best White House friend Israel has ever had. I still need to comment on this deal. Sorry, I'm not trying to rain on anybody's parade, and obviously I'm very happy for the families rejoicing that their loved ones who were hostages the past 2 years are coming home. But my friends, the deal sucks raw eggs with two straws. 40-some Israeli hostages are being released, many of whom are already dead. In exchange, Israel will release 250 life sentence prisoners. Criminals, terrorists. On top of that, an additional 1,700 Gazans captured during the war will be released. Hamas members will be given amnesty. Can you just imagine if we had the United Nations during World War II urging us to make a peace deal with Germany that included amnesty for Nazi war criminals and the release of Nazi war criminals? My friends, the deal in Gaza sucks precisely because it is a deal. You can't deal with terrorists. What part of that do people not understand? Dealing with terrorism only ensures more future terrorism. That's the whole purpose of a terrorist attack, terrorizing people into giving them their way. There was another way to bring peace. The handcuffs could have been taken off of Netanyahu. Israel could have been allowed to finish the job. I know that would have endangered the lives of the hostages. And to be honest, had I been part of a hostage family, I would not have wanted to take that risk either. I do understand. But we also have to understand this. How many of them were murdered anyway during the time? And with so many terrorists being released, aren't they just emboldened? All we have done is guarantee that there will someday be other attacks, other hostages, other grieving families. Israel is the only country in the world who, when attacked, is given sanctimonious lectures by the UN to give a measured response. Did we give a measured response to Japan after they attacked Pearl Harbor? If you think we did, I have just two reminders, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Had we not bombed those cities, thousands more American lives would have been lost. True, part of Trump's deal is that Hamas can't stay in power, but who's going to enforce that? Hamas will not honor this deal. They might promise to honor it, and while they make the promise, they'll be crossing their fingers behind their backs. They really have no such intention. And supposing it is somehow enforced, supposing Hamas is kept out of power, whether they like it or not, kept out of power by other Arabs. Window dressing, just window dressing. These very nations promising to help Trump make peace with Israel hate Israel. They are the same nations who tried to exterminate Israel many, many times since the middle of the 20th century. Will the Palestinian Authority now be governing? The Palestinian Charter doesn't recognize Israel's right to exist. Kindergarten children are taught to hate the Jews. They're taught that Jews are devils. I've seen these kids on television shows. What do you want to be when you grow up, sweetheart? Cute little five-year-old girl. I want to murder Jews. You want to murder Jews? How many of them? All of them. All of them? Now, you can't broadcast TV in Palestinian territory without Israel getting the reception. It's no secret, but it's not commonly known because of the alliance between Marxism, jihadism, Ivy League campuses, and the mainstream media. They wouldn't show such footage of kindergartners to college students if their lives depended on it. With that kind of hate embedded into children, how can we possibly imagine peace? In addition, there are other terrorist groups, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, just to name a couple. So even if Hamas itself is not allowed to break this agreement, I guarantee somebody will. I hope I'm wrong, but I know I'm not. What I am right now is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions at bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM 96.1 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Well, hello, Bob. How are you doing this afternoon?
Doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic. So I do want to comment on a couple of things on your Dragon's Prophecy movie review. Number one, I just wanted to say I have not seen the movie yet. So these are just a couple of tidbits I wanted to add in there. Number one, did you know that Dinesh D'Souza wasn't the only director in this movie, actually? Also credited was his wife, Debbie.
Oh, you know what? Now that you mentioned that, I do remember seeing her. So my apologies for forgetting to give her credit.
No, it's okay. Yeah. I don't know how much she really added in terms of the directing.
He's certainly the big name, but yes, she should be given credit too,
yes,
of course.
Yes, absolutely. So his wife, Debbie D'Souza, and also a guy named Bruce Schooley also directed.
Oh, there's always some guy named Bruce that always jumps into these projects.
So Bruce has also directed some of the other Dinesh D'Souza films, specifically Hillary's America, The Secret of the Democratic Party, and Death of a Nation. While both of them together, along with Dinesh D'Souza, also made Trump Car, 2000 Mules, Police State, and Vindicating Trump as well. So just wanted to add that note.
I've seen about two of those other ones. I haven't seen all of them.
I've only seen three.
I saw the one about the Democratic Party, which I appreciated. It talked about the Ku Klux Klan and slavery. And people don't understand that that's a lot of the legacy of the Democrat Party.
Right, it is. But in my opinion, though, again, times change and society changed. My main focus was, okay, so what can we do to really attack Hillary and her character in this whole situation? And unfortunately, I just feel as if, again, for a documentary film, there's a lot of liberties that were taken
well,
in that film.
There's plenty you could attack her on regardless of the history of the Democratic Party.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
What I specifically didn't appreciate more was they weren't using enough, I would say, videos or something. They hired actors, and these actors aren't very good, mind you, either.
Yeah, if it's already a documentary, we may as well see the real footage. Yeah. I agree with you.
I don't
that.
Think there was a scene in real life where Woodrow Wilson was watching Death of a Nation, and all of a sudden the horse comes out of the film like that. That one took liberty on that one. Nevertheless, one other thing I wanted to add was your point of view on the videos being actually in the movie itself.
Yeah, they did. They did show a few shootings, but they were mostly showing dead bodies. They had a lot of harrowing testimonies. Mm-hmm. Like I said, part of me was hoping we'd see more of the horrific things, but the other part of me obviously didn't want us to see that.
Right.
Who wants to watch that? But I do think they need to be seen, though.
I understand at the same time of what you're saying, it needs to be seen. I just don't know. It may seem disrespectful to the families of the victims in that case.
Well, I can understand checking with the families first. I would agree that if the families of the victims don't want that scene, then maybe it shouldn't
right.
be seen.
Because I remember,
but I know the Israeli government is showing that to people because they feel they should know the truth.
Right. I'm saying this because I just recently watched a documentary about a couple years ago called 77 Minutes, having to do with the mass shooting that happened at the San Ysidro McDonald's down there.
Yeah.
And the gentleman who made the film decided to put the entire police footage of all the victims and the weapons and everything like that. I don't know. That just didn't seem necessary to add.
Well, it's a judgment call, and probably who was going to say that was a justified shooting? The problem with this situation with Israel and Gaza is all the historical revision and Israel being blamed and even being blamed for the attack. And then even though Hamas came out and bragged about the attack at first, later on they tried to deny it. Mm-hmm. There's been lying. So when you hear all that, then I'm thinking, well, then this video is very good evidence.
I understand. And at the same time, though, I think the fact that you have those family members of those victims in the movie talk about the horrific things that were going on.
Yeah, but people could always say the family members are lying. So that's why I'm thinking it's not the same as actually seeing.
It's fair enough. I just think
I agree, though. I mean, who wants to watch that stuff? So I do understand your point.
My last thing I wanted to ask was, I know you gave it a thumbs up, but in terms of a score, what would you usually give it?
Oh, if I was scoring it, I'd probably give it a 7 or an 8.
Okay,
I wasn't thinking in terms of a score. But like I said, the Bible history was the best part of it. But there were some factual problems there, too. Like I mentioned when he said Pilate's name wasn't mentioned anywhere outside of the Bible. Yeah. That shouldn't have been a hard one to know. And Dinesh is a pretty bright guy, so I was surprised that one slipped through. But I felt I needed to say that.
No problem.
As a Christian apologist, that's stuff I emphasize all the time. People on this show probably heard me ad nauseum talk about Pontius Pilate.
valid and the sources totally. Outside of the
if,
Bible.
If I was watching that movie and
you would have known
that,
because you've heard me say it a million times.
I would have said, Bob, I can't believe you missed this. But nevertheless, all right, so moving on, I did want to announce on the air too about the new podcast that you have. So,
oh, well, thank you for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So for those who don't know, the Bob Siegel Show is moving off of CGM Radio Network. It's just due to career changes going on with Ryan, who runs the site of CGM Radio. So he will now be podcast through the Salem Media Network itself, which is really, really cool. So far, you're doing the religious show.
Yeah, I have a KPRZ show and a KCBQ show. The KCBQ show, for a while at least, will still be on the radio. Mm-hmm. And I will post the shows to my website, but that one will not be podcast. My radio show on Saturday mornings will be podcast. The podcast will follow it a few days later. The only difference is that I'll be taking out bumper music, because the podcast, even here at Salem, isn't licensed to carry that bumper music.
Exactly, yeah. We're only licensed to play what is on the air
on
specifically.
The actual air,
so
yeah. Yeah.
So eventually we'll get the KCBQ stuff eventually, possibly.
Maybe in time I'll do that. Right now it's kind of nice not having to. On the other network, I was cranking out a podcast every single day.
That's true.
And even if I was taking them from my radio shows, you'd still have to edit it into a podcast. So yeah. It's freed up a little more time, giving me more time to work on my novel series. But yeah, if the KPRZ podcast is well listened to, I might in time go ahead and put the KCBQ one on podcast as well.
Perfect. Awesome. And again, you can check those out at bobsiegel.net for...
If you want to subscribe to my podcast, just go to kprz.com. You can either go to podcast and scroll down till you find mine, or it would be quicker, type Bob Siegel in the search engine. Or again, if you go to my website, there'll be a link where you could get to that podcast.
Perfect.
Well.
One last thing before we head to commercial. I did want to talk about what's going on in today's radio station media. It has been really, really insane.
Sounds like a lot of shakeups. I never like hearing that, but apparently... You don't think it's anything of major concern.
Because
right? This
comes like a yearly thing, it feels like, around what they call the third quarter in the economic world. So iHeartRadio has announced that they have cut 30% of their staff members across the nation.
And iHeartRadio is connected to Salem Broadcasting?
Yes, in terms of podcasting and being able to stream our radio stations as well. Same thing goes with Odyssey, which is why I'm going to be talking about them. They said that they have laid off 300 staff members nationally as well. I'm not sure if any of them
are
local.
Is this because the radio business isn't doing as well?
Apparently so. They're overspending and not getting enough advertisers. Salem Media themselves have said that they have laid off 500 staff members nationally. Some actual big names that they do want to mention is Dennis Prager is still going to be podcasted and doing a brand new podcast called Timeless Wisdom. This podcast is basically a bust of Dennis Prager moments.
Yeah, because he himself is in no shape to be making new stuff right now.
Apparently we were trying to do a once a week show, a once per week. He comes into the studio and does it, but unfortunately
I hope he recovers well enough to be able to do that. He's a great broadcaster.
Yeah, unfortunately the latest update, it doesn't sound so good, unfortunately. Hearts and prayers go out to
him. I have met Dennis several times. He's just the greatest guy. He's every bit the same guy off radio as he is on radio, which is a very warm and intelligent persona.
Absolutely. And I do brag about, well, his voice can be a little long-winded here and there, but honestly, it is really relaxing to hear a conservative voice.
We're all long-winded or we wouldn't be here. Who are we kidding?
Some other things for national-wise, Stacey Washington and Andrew Wilco, they had programs on our Salem News Channel. They are terminated from their positions on Salem Media. They will continue on with their own podcasting platforms or their other radio shows that they have from other companies. But with Salem specifically, they have been let go. And lastly, Eric Metaxas, he has an afternoon show with us. It's a nationally syndicated show too. He has voluntarily stepped down, but he will be continuing on his own podcast platform, and not to mention his own other governmental program.
Probably these days, as long as people have podcasts, they don't even care if they're on conventional radio.
It's true.
I still have a soft spot for conventional radio because that's what I grew up on.
And me too.
Being on the radio excites me more than having a podcast, but I know podcasting's the way of the future, which is why I'm keeping my foot in the podcast.
I just find that it's very competitive. So to add the part about radio makes it feel a little bit more we're into it.
It's nice to have the best of both listeners. Worlds. Exactly. That's why I do both.
All right, so we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, boy, I feel like I'm TMZ because I got to talk about celebrities now all of a sudden.
You're
going to
talk about Diane Keaton, I imagine.
I imagine so. I do want to say rest in peace to her. She was 79. She passed away this week.
She wasn't my favorite. I'm sorry to see anybody pass away. She wasn't my favorite actress, but she does give me a good excuse to talk about The Godfather, which is one of my favorite movies and the movie where she got her start. So I'll look forward to some discussion on that.
All right.
Thank you.
is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480539, W&S Electric.
Looking for a church that will not only challenge you but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 in Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about, and you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda, but you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. Too hot. And people who approach that area have been known to disappear, but they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back.
Skyline Church.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, and say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Yeah, so the big news, as you guys have heard, was that Diane Keaton did pass away at the age of 79. Still, there's not a lot of details about her death, unfortunately, in the family.
She was, I should say, a very good actress. I didn't care for all the projects she did, but she did do a good job. She was a convincing actress.
Yeah, I really loved Annie Hall so much. I think it's a very hilarious movie.
I'm a fan of Woody Allen. Okay. I think he's hilarious. My problem with Annie Hall is it won Best Picture of the year Star Wars, the original Star Wars was nominated.
I can understand.
I'm sorry, Annie Hall just was not the best picture of the year that year.
Agreed. Now, his writing and his characters behind him, absolutely, I could say they could probably have won the
Did you ever see his very first movie, Take the Money and Run?
Yes, I have.
It was just hilarious. Yes. I think his first one was actually the funniest one he ever made.
I don't know. I would put it down to Annie Hall, honestly, because again, I just love his quirky attitude that he had in that movie compared to some of his other works that he had, especially his later works. I'm not a huge fan of his later works, too. But nevertheless, yeah, very, very sad to see her pass away. Another one of my favorites was Father of the Bride. She was really good in that movie.
There was one scene in there I didn't like, though, when Steve Martin, who played her husband, was in jail for getting into an altercation at a grocery store. She came down and gave him this little sanctimonious lecture. Now, I'm not going to pay your bail until you promise to behave. I'm thinking, lady, this is your husband. He's having a rough time already. That bothered me, that scene.
I view it as sort of a dark joke in the whole situation, probably. But and then I do have to shout out my wife's favorite movie, The Family Stone. A very, very sad film.
I saw that movie. I hated it.
Oh, I thought
it was
good.
They had such a stereotype, inaccurate view of conservatives in that movie. There was this woman that played the conservative girlfriend, and she was saying things about gay people that even though conservatives don't agree with that lifestyle, no conservative believes those things or would have said those things.
Yeah.
But what bothered me was the director of The Family Stone had directed the movie Sideways, which I loved. I thought
very
was
good
a
movie.
Hilarious movie, brilliant movie. So I was really looking forward to seeing The Family Stone, and that's probably another reason why I was so disappointed.
I can understand that. I think for me personally, when I was watching the movie, I wasn't crying as much as my wife was. I just felt as if it was too by the numbers with a lot of the characters. They're very much cookie cutter and everything, but it is my wife's favorite movie. I did have to shout it out for her because I know she's probably listening.
Please apologize to your wife for me that I didn't like it. I'm sure she and I share
there are a lot of movies that we do like.
Oh, definitely, for sure. Okay, and then, of course, I don't know if you happen to hear this news, too. This is more sports-related, but Loyola Chicago's big mascot or spokesperson, Sister Jean, passed away at the age of 106.
No, that I did not hear. Wow, 106.
Yeah, she went to every single basketball game, and 106, and she still went last
year,
too.
So you're saying if I saw more basketball games, I'd live longer?
Maybe, I don't know.
Is that the moral of the story?
But nevertheless, she was a huge, huge icon for the basketball team, and again, she will be sorely missed for sure. Now, let's get into the political side of this stuff here.
Oh, there's nothing political going on, Brendan.
I know. So Zach Bryan, a country artist I really love.
Yeah, now I had not, I don't follow country music, but when they played him on Fox News, I'm thinking, okay, if it's country, it's going to be conservative, because that's generally
the general.
Not always, I know, but generally. And I was very unpleasantly surprised to hear him singing against ICE and against borders.
Yes.
And as an artist, I'm always torn. I'm not a composer, but I write novels. I'm always torn when I think the art is good, but the message is horrible. I thought it was a well-written song. I thought the lyrics were very clever, but it was a horrible message.
Well, okay, so let me start off by saying this when it comes to his music stuff. Lyrically, I think he always does really, really well in a lot of his songs. I will also say that I enjoy the sound of it. I cannot stand all these stupid trap beats and hip-hop beats that are getting into my country music. I just want some straight-up good old
fashioned country.
Country
the way the good Lord intended country to be.
Thank you. So stop Morgan Wallen with your trap beats and all that stuff. I just want some good old fashioned Zach Bryan sounding kind of country. That's all. But nevertheless, he's been going into some controversy recently. I don't know if you happen to hear this story.
I heard he tried to walk back the lyrics of that song a
little
bit and claimed that he wasn't trying to be anti-ICE. But
yes, I'll talk
he sure
about
could
that.
Have fooled me from
his
lyrics.
There was some other stuff that happened. So last year, he was dating a girl, and I'm not kidding you, her celebrity name was called Brittany Chickenfoot. I don't know why that's the name, but that's her name. So anyways, the long story about this is that...
Not Britney Spears, Britney with the spears to eat.
Exactly. So they were dating, apparently, and in the middle of the breakup, he said, I'm going to pay you $3 million if you sign this NDA so you do not talk about our relationship and what happened within it. And she completely refused. The day after they break up, she goes onto a podcast to describe the horrific things this guy has done to this girl. Specifically, it's just a lot of emotional abuse and verbal abuse towards her.
Did it sound like she was telling the truth? Or
yes.
Did it sound like she was just, okay.
And
why do
I
people
it.
Have to take something that private and make it public? She has a legitimate complaint. The thing to do is go to the law, but why does a podcast have to be
exactly? And
it?
Not only that, if you have all this evidence, then why are you trying to monetize yourself to do it in order to get that message out?
It makes us question their motives and their case a little bit.
Yeah. So because of this, he canceled the rest of his tour, but he did not cancel putting out more music. He put a lot of music out in between this whole situation. So he's already under a lot of criticizing, and he's about to start another tour here shortly, I believe. He just finished up touring with, get this, Bruce Springsteen, of all people. What a
really?
Surprise.
Wow. Now,
the most liberal of all singer-songwriters out there.
Maybe a little bit of Springsteen is rubbing off on him.
Maybe. So he put out a snippet of a song called Bad News, which he's looking to put out on his next album. He stated that this song was being made 3 months ago, and it's still just in the middle of mixing and everything. I just wanted to share a tidbit of it. So I'm going to read some lyrics. I'm going to skip over the cuss words, I promise you here, okay? I heard the cops came, cocky, ain't they? And ICE is going to come bust down your door, try to build a house that no one builds no more. But I got a telephone. Kids are scared and all alone. The bar stopped bumping, the rock stopped rolling, the middle finger's rising, and it won't stop showing. Got some bad news, fading the red, white, and blue, is what he said in the song lyrics. Now, of course, politicians have stepped in. Trisha McLaughlin, Assistant Secretary of Public Affairs for the United States Department of Homeland Security, said that Zach Bryan should stick to Pink Skies, his 2014 song. And not only that, the next day they also used Zach Bryan's song Revival in a social media post showing...
Well, of course, as an artist, he's free, as far as I'm concerned, to say whatever he wants, even though I may vehemently disagree with what he's saying.
Yes. That was the weird thing. So Kristi Noem said publicly that, oh, he shouldn't be getting into the political world. I disagree with her entirely.
Because if a conservative said something positive, she probably wouldn't have complained about
that. Exactly. And this goes on to another person that I watch for music news. He even said, oh, Kristi Noem shouldn't comment on the celebrity making political comments. She should focus more on her job. No, I think she should also have an opinion on this matter. Someone's criticizing your work. You should be able to freely criticize back and say, listen, I don't appreciate what you stated. It's not...
Yeah,
actually.
Criticize what he said, but don't say, as an artist, you shouldn't say it.
No, I agree on that part. No, but if you want to criticize.
She can criticize what he actually said,
exactly.
Sure, because what he said was false.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree. The music news reporter that I watch on YouTube, I'm subscribed to him now, because I think that's not a fair judgment call. It's the same thing with athletes. I get some perspective of some people that say, oh, athletes shouldn't see politically, but I think they're a person as much as we are. I think they should say a word and what they say politically, whether we agree with it or not, that's up to us. But athletes, other professions, they should have their opinion stated. Again, there's a state.
Unless we feel that their waning sports career is the motivation behind getting attention, like taking a knee during the national anthem,
or
Kaepernick was doing.
Right, or you're applauding certain assassination of a conservative thinking
head. There's some things that are just beyond the pale.
Exactly. I'm glad that doctor got let go of his position. Let me tell you, that was just horrendous. I wouldn't want him working on me. Yeah, for sure. Only other thing to note is that she also mentioned that we should be listening to more conservative country music artists like Jason Aldean or John Rich. Those guys are what it means for standing for freedom. I don't like their music totally too much. Sorry, Vice.
It is frustrating when someone with the right message is not as good of an artist, and then it's great art, but with a horrible message.
Mm-hmm. Now, Zach Bryan did respond to this. Now, I have a different point of view on this situation as you for this matter. Here's what he posted. I posted this song 3 months ago as a snippet. This shows you how divisive a narrative can be when shoved down our throats through social media. This song is about how much I love this country and everyone in it more than anything. When you hear the rest of the song, you will understand the full context that hits both sides of the aisle. To see how much, I can't say the next word, but it stirred up makes me not only embarrassed, but kind of scared. Left wing or right wing, we're all one bird and American. And to be clear, I'm neither of these radical sides. To all those that are disappointed in me on which side I am, whatever you believe in, just know I'm trying my best too, and we all say things that are misconstrued sometimes. I served this country, which he did. He was a former Navy sailor. I love this country, and this song itself is about all of us coming out of this divided space. I wasn't speaking as a politician or some greater than thou. I cannot say the next word after that too. Just a 29-year-old man who is just as confused as everyone else.
Okay, let me respond as carefully as I can.
Go for it.
I completely sympathize with somebody who wants to be heard in context. Mm-hmm. God knows the Bible gets taken out of context all the time.
Yes.
And it always comes my way as a Christian apologist. Mm-hmm. I understand artists can be taken out of context, and I have not heard the whole song, so I want to be fair. But I must say at this point, what I heard, I find it very hard to believe that the context would have changed the meaning of those words. Have you heard the whole song?
No.
Do you think the context changes the meaning of what he said?
The album itself will not be released.
No, not the album. Isn't he saying that there's something in that whole song?
He said it's going to be released with the album. The album won't come out.
So nobody's heard the whole thing.
Exactly. It won't come out till January. Okay. So
give some time to go back and change it.
Exactly.
If he wants to.
Yeah, yeah. Or not even release the song for that matter. Because again, I mean, he is putting a lot of work into
the song.
There's
been so many times politicians have tried to walk things back and say, you need to understand me in context. Then they explain the context, and they're more or less saying the same thing.
Yes, absolutely.
But I guess, all right, we'll give them a fair shake.
Now, here's what I'm disappointed in, is that it sounds just like, we talked about this artist prior to this whole thing too, because I did an album review on this artist. I'm trying to remember his name. Let me look it up again. It's North of Richmond. North of Richmond. It was Oliver Anthony. That's the person I'm talking about. He made a very conservative song, but however, he completely disowned conservative politics and the fans of the conservative party, saying, I am not a conservative.
He was kind of disowning his own song.
Exactly, yeah. So my point of view is this. I can totally understand that some people might have liberal views mixed with conservative views, but this walking back situation here that you're doing, even if you do have a different context behind the song, it just feels so watered down and maybe wishy-washy.
The bottom line is, it sounds like they're saying, I didn't really say what you heard me say. That's the problem.
I guess my only idea of what he's going to go behind with this song, there was a song called I'm Not Racist, and it was done by a rapper. He viewed it from a white perspective and then a black perspective in the song. I think what he's planning to do is do a conservative point of view and then a liberal point of view.
Okay, well, now if he does that, That will be very interesting. And yes. That would make a difference. By the way, speaking of context, did you ever see the movie This Is Spinal Tap?
Yes, I have.
Did you like that, the satire?
I love it.
Satire documentary of a rock.
Yeah.
There was this one scene, and there's supposed to be this British group where they came out with this album, and it was this very lewd picture on the album. It was this woman, I think she was like in a bikini, and she had a collar on. She was like on a leash. I think the guy might have even had a whip. And this agent's just scouring them. How could you put something like that? He goes, oh, no, no, no. You don't understand the context. We're just saying, look at how horrible those things can be. That's what this is reminding me
of. It's true. Again, I understand, again, that he might be mixed on the opinion, or again, we don't know the context of the song.
If he
for
is
sure.
planning on two sets of lyrics, each from a different point
that's
of view,
that's what I'm predicting.
That would be very interesting.
Yes.
I just hope it's not an idea he suddenly came up with and he's hurrying and writing the conservative side to cover his own butt.
I am so believing that's actually the context on the whole thing. I bet there is going to be a rough draft of the song, like a demo version is what they call it. And when we hear that, we'll be like, "What? No, that's not what is going on in this song."
So you think he's probably rushing to write the other song?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. And there's a reason why he released it 3 months and then now it's coming out all of a sudden. Because again, his opinion's going to change over time, or he's going to hear his fans and be like, okay,
besides, if
I
he
need
wants to
fix
keep
him.
Playing with Bruce Springsteen, he's going to have to watch how conservative he becomes.
I know, because he's very, very liberal in that situation. So I'm not going to have time to play another commercial, so I'll just get right into our next topic.
Okay, go right ahead.
President Trump did not win the Nobel Peace Prize.
I am not in the slightest bit surprised. I think we would I think we would both agree that he probably deserves about 15
yes.
Nobel Peace. However, the prestige, and I know Nobel is considered the most prestigious awards in the world for many categories. It's the highest prize in literature, the highest prize. Yeah. Al Gore won the Nobel Prize for a prediction which, if it had come true, none of us would be here now.
True.
So it was a bunch of nonsense. Yasser Arafat, the head of the Palestine Liberation Organization, was given the Nobel Prize. Barack Obama was given the Nobel Prize for doing nothing but getting elected. So we could say the award. Now, the person they did give it to was that woman that was fighting for the presidency in Venezuela.
Right.
And I'm disappointed that they didn't give it to Trump, and I would have rather they gave it to him. But I'm not unhappy that she got it, and she was very classy. She called President Trump on the phone and said, I don't deserve this award, and I want to dedicate it to you. I thought that was a very classy thing for
agreed.
Her to do.
Now, again, I think Trump should have deserved it only because it meant more internationally than what her movement was
it
doing.
It did. Oh, absolutely.
Because her movement was specific only in Venezuela.
I'm just saying, compared to Al Gore, she's somebody who probably deserved it. But we're in complete agreement.
It could have been worse.
They could have given the award to Greta Thunberg.
True.
And she's actually been nominated a couple of times. No surprise.
So. A box of Cheerios would have won a Nobel Peace Prize better than Al Gore, in my opinion. But that's nevertheless.
It's getting to the point where the Nobel Prize is becoming a participation trophy.
Now, you mentioned something off the air when I was telling you some of the topics we were talking about George Soros and his affiliation.
Yes, I heard that the head of the Nobel Committee works for George Soros, and that they had I forget the exact title of the company, but it's some kind of anti-borders movement. Mm-hmm. So he's obviously somebody that has it in for Trump.
I agree.
He gave a sanctimonious lecture about how we don't let those kinds of biases enter in. It's completely objective. I don't believe that for a second.
I want to read this quick quote. There's a citizen of Venezuela, 32, Sandra Martinez. She said, and I quote, I'm not kidding you, I don't know what can be improved in our country, but all I know is that she deserved it. She's a great woman. So she doesn't even know what this woman did in her own country to deserve this award.
Well, she was a woman. That's why she died.
I think so. She is the 20th woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize out of 112 individuals who have been honored with the award. The only thing else I did want to mention, too, is so they use the example of the ceasefire in Gaza Strip. But we talked about it in your monologue earlier. This treaty just isn't strong enough. And I don't trust Hamas as much
either as Hamas or Hamas rebranded or another terrorist group. We might have peace for a while. We might even have peace for a year. There's going to be another attack on Israel because nobody involved in the peace process, with the exception of the United States, loves Israel.
Right. Israel's national forces moved out of the Gaza area, and now Hamas police forces are in the streets right
now. And did you know that, you know, people are saying, oh, they're celebrating in Gaza too? Yeah, there's a lot of people in Gaza are out in the streets crying victory that we won, because when their terrorists are released from prison, it's viewed as a sign of weakness by the West, and they're viewing this as a victory. So we have not seen the end of this yet.
And not to mention,
I'm still glad our hostages are coming home, but we have not seen the end.
But it's going so slowly. I thought it would be, all right, just get out of here and go. But no, this is going at a slug's
pace. And the thing is, when Trump won the election before he was inaugurated, he said to Hamas, you have till my inauguration day to release every single hostage or there will be hell to pay. Mm-hmm. Here we are a year later, and they were told last week that if they don't agree to this, there'll be hell to pay. Yeah. So talk about it being slow walked.
Totally. I do want to mention the other awards, like you stated. Medicine and economics is going to be awarded tomorrow, with physics on Tuesday.
Those are probably more accurately distributed.
Yeah. Literature will be on Thursday, which I hear Kamala Harris's book is probably nominated for.
Yeah, to the AI that wrote Kamala's book, we give them. I heard something very interesting years ago. The fellow who wrote the novel, Dr. Zhivago,
okay,
was given the Nobel Prize for Literature, and the Russian government wouldn't allow him to receive it.
Wow.
Now, I heard that years ago. It's something I heard. I think I was a kid when I heard it, so I suppose we should look into it and see if it really happened, yeah. But I did hear that.
Well, I will say this very quickly, because we're coming to the end of our show. There's a Christian artist who just recently tweeted out, I will never go to an award show. Those are external awards. I only care about the internal awards that the Lord will present me for.
Well, I think they are overblown. Nevertheless, when somebody's given an award, it's an honor, and I don't begrudge anybody receiving
it. I agree too. Well, Bob, thank you again so much for this interaction.
Brendan,
today.
You always come up with great topics. It was a very feisty discussion today. I enjoyed every minute of it.
Thank you.